Michi, Boone, Boquist, Bruin, Buckley, Burley, Butler, Cameron, Cannon, Clem, Cowan, Dallum, Dingfelder, Chris Edwards, David Edwards, Esquivel, Flores, Galizio, Gerard, Gelzer, Gilliam, Gilman, Gerard, Greenlick, Hannah, Holvey, Hunt, Jensen, Comp, Kotek, Krieger, Crummel, Lim, McPherson, Maurer, Minnis, Morgan, Nathanson, Nelson, Nolan, Olson, Reed, Richardson, Riley, Roblin, Rosenbaum, Schaffler, Scott, Shields, Greg Smith, Patty Smith, Thatcher, Tomei, Wisnet, Witt, Mr. Speaker, excused, Burley, Hannah, Greg Smith, Patty Smith.
Flag salute will be led by Representative Ron Maurer.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
The opening ceremony today will be presented by Carlos Reyes, reading a poem that of his own. He is a guest of Representative Carolyn Tomei.
Well, good morning. I'm very pleased that the state of Oregon has acknowledged poetry by inviting various poets to come and open the session. And this poem is about the moon. Trading a bucket of water for the moon. The 10 pale drops down the well shatters the moon. As the bucket fills, it gathers up silver fragments. Sent only for water, I am delighted to carry the moon shimmering in my bucket. As I draw up the glistening cord that threads through the rusting wheel, it sends drops of water into an ever-complaining orbit. I run to the house, proud of my catch, eager to show my mother. As I hurry, I splash silver pieces of moon on the sun-dried earth. From the porch, she sees the broken moon as mirrors, fragments, fears the worst, the curse of 7 nights of moonless sky. She curses me, her clumsy son. Last time it was a bag of stars I spilled along a dusty road. I had scooped up the stars, extinguishing each spark with dirt I mixed in as I refilled the spilled bag of sugar. First stars, now the moon. What else? Thank you very much.
Thank you so much for sharing your poem. Courtesies, Representative Tomei.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, I am pleased to introduce to you today our poet, Carlos Reyes. Carlos Reyes is a noted writer, poet, and translator. Fellow writers have said about his work, Mr. Reyes is one of our local and national treasures. His poetry is as clear and strong as can be. One is always struck by his sensual and sensory qualities, the touch, taste, feel, color of things, and his ability to capture a mood, a world, in a handful of lines. And we heard that this morning. He has published several books of poetry, most recently At the Edge of the Western Wave. Another collection, A Suitcase Full of Crows, was a finalist in the Oregon Book Awards. He is also the publisher and editor of Trask House Books, a small local press, and he is sometimes a poetry reviewer for the Willamette Week. Mr. Reyes lives in Portland in my district, House District 41, with his wife and book designer, Karen Checkaway. He travels often to Ireland, where he maintains an 18th century Irish cottage and is a frequent visitor to Spain and Ecuador. Welcome, Carlos, and thank you for helping us celebrate National Poetry Month.
Further courtesies, Representative Hunt.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. It's my privilege to introduce several pages we have here today. And if you can stand as I read your name, Emily Everson is an eighth grader at Cracksburger Middle School in Gladstone. She's very involved in volleyball, drama, piano, and cooking, and wants to be, how's this for a career goal set, an actress, a lawyer, or fashion designer, or maybe all three. Welcome, Emily. Next up is Reagan Cronin, also an eighth grader at Cracksburger. Her interests are soccer, basketball, softball, art, history, and cooking. Welcome. Next up, Brianna Williams. Also, you can see a trend here, an eighth grader from Gladstone Middle, from Cracksburger Middle School in Gladstone. Her interests are soccer, basketball, volleyball, and leadership. Welcome. Jessica Conrad, also an eighth grader at Cracksburger. Interests in volleyball, leadership, and math. Welcome. Ben Scott, who is also a 14-year-old eighth grader from Cracksburger, very involved in Boy Scouts, where he's working on his Eagle Scout degree, wrestling, martial arts, and snowboarding. And last but not least, Megan Hill, who is actually the daughter of our realtor who sold us our house, an eighth grader at Cracksburger Middle School, interested in travel, boating, and swimming. Welcome to all of you.
Further courtesies, Representative Riley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Speaker, we have a group of people from Oregon Ask in the gallery, and I would ask that you recognize them. Thank you.
Are there further courtesies? I'd like to welcome today representatives of Donate Life Northwest, formerly known as the Oregon Donor Program. They're with us as part of their planned day at the Capitol. Governor Kulikowski has proclaimed April as Donate Life Month. Since 1975, Donate Life Northwest has been advocating for improved donation laws, educating the public, and raising the region's donation rate. They are here to encourage those of us who wish to be donors to use the statewide online donor registry available on their website launched last week. It provides a safe, secure way for Oregonians to be certain their wishes to become an organ, eye, or tissue donor are known and honored. So I'd encourage folks to check out that website. So it's great to have Donate Life with us today. Welcome. Thank you. Further courtesies? Messages from the governor. Messages from the Senate.
Mr. Speaker, I'm directed by the president from the Senate to pass Senate Bill 838.
First reading, memorials and resolutions. Standing committee reports. The committee report file has been distributed. Special committee reports. Special orders of business. During session yesterday, there was a motion on the floor to set as a special order of business. The motion was to refer House Bill 2508 to the Committee on Transportation. Representative Butler.
Mr. Speaker, I request unanimous consent that the rules be suspended, I be allowed to withdraw my motion to refer House Bill 2508 to the Committee on Transportation.
Representative Butler, request unanimous consent that the rules be suspended, he be allowed to withdraw his motion to refer House Bill 2508 to the Committee on Transportation. Is there any objection? Hearing none, so ordered. The motion has been withdrawn. Is there further discussion on the bill? Representative Butler.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Colleagues, first of all, I want to stampede to apologize to you for upsetting the order of business yesterday. I certainly had not intended to do that as this bill was being carried and moved. It was just, and I did go to the chair of the Committee on Transportation, House Committee on Transportation, and she admonished me that she really didn't want to hear this bill in that committee either. It isn't the most popular subject, but we had excellent testimony, and I did bring the bill folder for House Bill 2466, and let me just share with you the concerns that this bill raises, which we have, and I appreciate the chair of the committee telling us that this is an ongoing, extends the current technology, the current program that allows the local control, and it allows the technology that's been used in the past to continue on. The testimony that we heard with regard to this technology, however, is number one, the digital technology which is being employed is the most inferior way to track these kinds of infractions, and that the best technology available, for which the city of Portland pays between $35,000 and $40,000 a month, plus an officer to monitor each one of these machines that do these kinds of things, this $45,000 cost per month, is this technology, which is called the wet film technology, gives them about a 60% success ratio. So this is the technology, and members, please don't take my concern about the bill yesterday being moved to a committee where this could be considered as being any kind of a statement on the ability to track folks that are going to blow stop lights or stop signs or those kinds of things. I want Oregon to be safe. My concern is that the existing technology is not good technology, and we need to encourage those cities and other municipalities which would employ this kind of photo radar to please make sure that they examine themselves and examine their technology and their delivery, and to please come forward. So again, colleagues, I again want to apologize for moving out of order yesterday in moving forward with this. I still am concerned that cities learn from the experiences of the city of Portland that if you want good technology and reliable technology, unfortunately, it just costs a lot of money, and I don't think that any of these programs that we've got are the $35,000 to $40,000 a month systems that Portland has had to move to in order to protect itself. Thank you very much.
Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Barker, do you wish to close?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, this bill, as everybody kind of asked me about yesterday after session, kind of went sideways during the event, and it's really a very basic, simple bill. Photo radar has been in the, or not photo radar, I'm sorry, this is not photo radar. Photo red light has been in effect for some time now, and we use it as a pilot project in some of the larger cities. And it's working, those cities are happy with it. And so what we decided to do when we reviewed the bill this year was remove any population restrictions so that any city that wanted it, local option, could put it in. And didn't say how many lights they could put those cameras on, if they want to put them on one or more. the things that got we kind of got sidetracked on was the cost and all that. It has nothing really to do with this bill. That's up to the local cities. There was a thing that people said, complained about photo radar. This is not photo radar. And one of my colleagues said that he didn't like it because you were guilty until proven innocent. And that's not any more true than if an officer stopped and gave you the citation. You're innocent until you're proven guilty in court. And I'll say one more thing about the officer enforcing red lights. That's a difficult job to do. I've done it myself. You wait for a light to change. You try to position yourself. You have to be able to see the light. It turns red. The car goes through. And then you have to maneuver through traffic in oftentimes a hazardous way to catch up to the violator. I believe, and it's been the experience of the cities that use it, that violations drop off once people get the message. And I can tell you personally, I know where the lights are in Beaverton that are marked in my district that have these cameras, but it's in the back of my mind, and I've found myself not going through other red lights, not running other red lights late or yellow lights late, because that's just in my mind that you shouldn't do that. And again, you know, I was the victim of somebody who ran a red light in December, and fortunately my wife and I weren't hurt. This bill has the possibility of saving Oregonians' lives. It's a good bill, and it's a simple bill, and I ask for your aye vote. Thank you.
Those who are of the opinion the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. And the clerk will open the voting system. Representative Nelson, how do you vote? Representative Nelson is off the floor. Representative Shields votes aye. Representative Minnis, how do you vote? Representative Minnis is off the floor. House Bill 2508A, having received a constitutional majority, is declared passed. Propositions and motions. Representative Schaffler.
Excuse me, Mr. Speaker. Thank you. I move the House concur in the Senate amendments to House Bill 2079 and repass the bill.
Representative Schaffler moves the House concur in Senate amendments to House Bill 2079 and repass the bill. To your motion.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. House Bill 2079 has to do with the Oregon Board of Accountancy. I know it's an issue we're all enthralled with, and I just want to make a request. I hope my friend from Ontario doesn't send the floor into a tailspin today over this bill. So enough of that. All it really does is we deleted the Senate, in all their great wisdom, has deleted the bold language on page 5, line 21, and all that does is retains current authority for the board to determine requirements for public accountancy experience without requiring rulemaking. Good bill, should pass.
Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Schaffler, do you wish to close?
No, thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Those who are of the opinion that the House concur in the Senate amendments to House Bill 2079A and repass the bill will vote aye. Those opposed, no, and the clerk will open the voting system. Representative Butler, for what purpose do you rise?
Potential conflict, Mr. Speaker.
Please go ahead and state your potential conflict for the record.
I hold a license with the board that will be given oversight in this matter.
So noted for the record. Representative Nelson, how do you vote? Representative Nelson is off the floor. Representative Thatcher votes aye. Representative Minnis Off the floor. House Bill 2079A, having received a constitutional majority, is declared passed. Representative McPherson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move the House concur in the Senate amendments to House Bill 2384 and repass the bill.
Representative McPherson moves the House concur in the Senate amendments to House Bill 2384A and repass the bill. To your motion.
Colleagues, this was a bill that was purely a clarification with respect to uninsured driver's license insurance, uninsured motorist insurance on auto insurance policies. Let me state that correctly. It was just cleaning up a technical problem that arose because of a change that was made in the law in the last session. It came through on the consent calendar here earlier. When it went over to the Senate side, an emergency clause was placed on it because it appeared desirable to get that clarification in effect sooner. So the only change was to add an emergency clause to the bill. I urge your vote once again for House Bill 2384.
Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative McPherson, do you wish to close? He does not. Those are opinion. The House concur in the Senate amendments to House Bill 2384A and repass the bill will vote aye. Those opposed, no. And the clerk will open the voting system. Representative Nelson, how do you vote? Representative Nelson is off the floor. Representative Lim votes aye. Representative Rosenbaum votes aye. House Bill 2384A, having received a constitutional majority, is declared repassed. First reading of House bills.
House Bill 3536, relating to human rights.
Bill read first time, is passed the Speaker's desk for referral. Second reading of House bills.
House Bill 2750, relating to providing computers to individual students and declaring an emergency. House Bill 2848, relating to education and declaring an emergency. House Bill 2925, relating to wave energy and declaring an emergency.
Bills read second time or passed to third reading. Consent calendar. Clerk will read the bill and short summary. Oh, no consent bills today. Third reading of House bills. Clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 2622, relating to Oregon Youth Authority.
Question now arises on third reading and final passage of House Bill 2622. Representative Escobar.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, House Bill 2622 is binding arbitration for Oregon Youth Authority juvenile parole. These individuals are already part of the PERS system in police and fire retirement, so no change in benefits will result in this. This bill simply acknowledges the role of juvenile parole officers in the public safety community, requires that contract and labor disputes be resolved through binding arbitration. Binding arbitration, of course, is the alternative non-confrontational process to a strike or work stoppage. Arbitrators are selected and agreed on mutually by labor and management. When the contract has been negotiated, either labor or management can decide to take unresolved issues forward for an arbitration to be resolved. The arbitrator examines the position of both sides and makes a decision that is binding on both labor and management. In return for this process, the workers agree not to have any work stoppage, slowdowns, or other workplace disruptions. This is common practice in members of the public safety community where it has been determined that their presence is crucial in the safety of their clients, Oregon citizens, and the community. This came out of committee with a unanimous vote. I urge an aye vote.
Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Escobar, do you wish to close? He does not. Those with opinion the bill should pass, vote aye. Those opposed, no. And the clerk will open the voting system. Representative Dallum, how do you vote? Representative Dallum votes aye. Representative Nelson is off the floor. Representative Roblin, how do you vote? Aye. Roblin votes aye. House Bill 2622, having received a constitutional majority, is declared passed. Clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 3009, relating to Oregon Veterans Home and declaring an emergency.
Question now arises on third reading and final passage of House Bill 3009. Representative Boquist.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. House Bill 3009 comes to you with a unanimous vote from your Veterans Committee. House Bill 3009 creates a second Oregon Veterans Home loan similar to the one that was opened 10 years ago in the Dalles. Let me give you a quick background on the first Oregon Veterans Home from the Dalles. It was built with a combination of donated land, local bond levy from Wasco County, and a grant from the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs. There are 151 beds at the Dalles, and more than 800 veterans have been served since 1997. The home in the Dalles has an excellent track record of care for patients and receives high remarks from the state and federal Veterans Affairs agencies. It is also financially sound, provides affordable services, and it's something that we can all be proud of here in Oregon. No state dollars were used to build and operate the facility, and none are being requested for the second home. Let me say this again, folks. There are no general fund dollars that have been used or will be used for these veterans' homes. One of the reasons for the success of the Dalles is that all of the support from dozens of veterans organizations across the state. Today, these same groups are coming back to the legislature and are looking to the future to see on the horizon to start building a second skilled nursing facility for veterans. It's no secret that Oregon has a large veterans population, and it's getting larger every day. Currently, there are more than 360,000, I say again, more than 360,000 veterans in the state of Oregon, 40,000 of which are disabled. The federal VA estimates Oregon would need 800 veterans beds to meet this requirement. We know our veterans population is aging, and some of our newest veterans are coming home with traumatic brain injuries. There is currently a waiting list for specialized Alzheimer's beds in the Dalles, so we need to be thinking ahead. Compared to Oregon states, Oregon is lagging behind. Nationwide, there are 119 state veteran homes. The first one was established in 1864 in Connecticut in the Civil War, and in the Pacific Northwest, Idaho and Washington. Idaho to our east, Washington to our north, each have three veterans homes. Missouri and Colorado have seven each. Meanwhile, Oregon has one. Mississippi has five veterans homes with fewer than 100,000 veterans. They have five for 100,000. We have one for 360,000. Oklahoma has six veterans homes and still has less veterans than we have. House Bill 3009 would help Oregon catch up with the other states and provide a similar level of opportunity. House Bill 3009 helps speed up the lengthy and expensive process of getting the second home up and running as soon as possible by waiving the certificate of need. Many other states exempt their homes from the certificate need process for the same reasons and because they know the homes are financially viable. Some states even allow their veterans to live at their veterans' home for free. We, again, are not asking that, and we're not spending state dollars here. Supporters maintain, and I fully agree, as did the committee, our nation has made it a policy to make veterans' homes available to veterans on behalf of a grateful nation, and we should not put up roadblocks to provide that service. After all, giving disabled and elderly veterans who need nursing care a place where they can live with other veterans is the least we can do for them. I'd like to turn it over now to my co-carrier and the good representative from Wilsonville at this time. Thank you.
Representative Crummell.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and thank you to the good representative from Polk County and to the members of the Veterans Affairs Committee for allowing this bill to move forward. House Bill 3009 is the work of a couple of my constituents, Rick and Elizabeth Peters from Wilsonville. The Peters formed the Oregon Veterans Foundation with the vision of creating an Oregon Veterans Center, a place where veterans and their families could not only seek skilled nursing care in a second Oregon Veterans Home, but they could also get outpatient health care, employment, technical training, physical rehab, and other services through government agencies and nonprofit groups. Think about it. Veterans wouldn't have to drive all over to get what they need. It would all be in one location. The Peters envision a world-class Oregon Veterans Museum, a sports center, meeting space, and outdoor features like an amphitheater and statues. To help them build this vision, the Peters put together experts from all over the state. They formed an advisory committee made up of representatives from the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs, the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs, several civic leaders, and they enlisted the help of the United Veterans Groups of Oregon, representing more than a dozen different entities. Some church groups and others have also expressed an interest. This would truly be a public-private partnership. The Veterans Center would be so much more than a place for veterans. It would be a place for the community to experience a living history, where classrooms could take field trips and other groups could visit to learn from those who fought for our freedoms. The Peters have done a lot of legwork on this project. They believe in order for this project to be a success, it should be located near the largest concentration of veterans in Oregon, preferably in the southern part of the Portland metro area. I know this project still has several hurdles to cross, and siting is one of the most important. But there are many groups who support putting this facility in the Wilsonville area, and I'm only saying on the record today, I think it would be a perfect fit for Wilsonville. Not only is it easily accessible for families coming from north, south, east, or west, but Wilsonville has been recognized as a place that honors veterans. Wilsonville is home to the Oregon American Legion headquarters. A few years back, I helped to get the Korean War Memorial established in Wilsonville. And every year, the annual Veterans Day convoy comes down Veterans Memorial Highway, otherwise known as I-205, from Vancouver and ends at the memorial in Wilsonville. And if the powers that be eventually decide that Wilsonville is the right spot, the Oregon Veterans Foundation has already identified a great spot along I-5, 50 acres of property, most of it ready to be donated for this very worthy cause. The Peters and the Foundation have done their homework. They have the research to back up locating this facility in Wilsonville, which includes a readily available workforce. But again, the siting process is not our number one concern here today. That will come in due time. And when the time is right to select a location for Oregon's second Veterans Home, I hope those in charge will turn to the Peters for their guidance and their vision. If Wilsonville is not the chosen site, then I hope this wonderful model for an Oregon Veterans Center can be used successfully in some other location to complement the new Veterans Home. This is but a start. Colleagues, I urge your aye vote on House Bill 3009. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Further discussion, Representative Dallum.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Yes, I would like to follow up to Representative Crummell's remarks. Whether it's Wilsonville or not, to establish another veterans home is a long road before success is achieved. They have a long way to go. They have many obstacles to overcome. This is the first step, and I urge you to support them in making this first important step. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Further discussion, Representative Lim.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. This House Bill 2009 is a good bill. This bill simply includes spouses and excludes the certificate of needs on building a veterans home requirement. As a former houseboy for the U.S. servicemen stationed in Korea, and I do deeply appreciate it that the servicemen serving around the world, especially in Korea during the war 1950 to 1953. During the Korean War, more than 37,300 young men and women were killed during the Korean War for the freedom. and I the one that the beneficiary of their sacrifice. I do really appreciate it, and as a former houseboy, I should remember the General Williams and the Colonel Cummings and Major Stanley, whom I served as a houseboy. I still remember those times. So this is a good bill, and with my deep appreciation for their service and sacrifice they have done, I fully, with my bottom of my heart, support. And then the men and women of our armed service deserve our best, and this is the one way we can say thank you. Thank you, Mr. President.
Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Boquist, do you wish to close? He does not. Those who are opinion the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. And the clerk will open the voting system. Representative Bonamici, for what purpose do your eyes?
For the order of 36.
And Representative Bonamici, how do you vote?
Aye.
She votes aye. Representative Scott votes aye. Representative Beyer, how do you vote? Representative Beyer votes aye. House Bill 3009, having received a constitutional majority, is declared passed. Clerk, read the next bill. Oh. Before we read the next bill, I think Representative Bonamici would like to request a return to courtesies.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to request permission to return to the order of courtesies.
Without objection, we return to courtesies.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, I'd like you to join me in welcoming today a group of students from Oak Hills Elementary School, one of the fine schools of the Beaverton School District. Oak Hills happens to be in my legislative district, and I know they have several teachers with them here today, including Ms. Gorman and Mr. Rodriguez, who was my daughter's fifth grade teacher at Ridgewood. So please help me and join me in making them feel welcome today. Welcome.
Wonderful to have you here. Representative Cameron.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, while we're in courtesies, I'd like to introduce my sister, Jeanann. She's up from Southern California today visiting with me over her spring break, and she's a dedicated teacher, bilingual high school teacher for 21 years in the school district in Diamond Bar.
Welcome. Further courtesies. Clerk, read the next bill.
House Bill 2222, relating to employer safety committees.
Question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2222, carried by Representative Garrod.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, there have been a couple firsts for me this year, and this will be another. House Bill 2222 involves one of most Republicans' favorite agencies, OSHA. I speak in favor of an OSHA request. OSHA believes that they need to rewrite some of their administrative rules so that mandatory safety meetings are less often triggered and or less onerous. Please note on the second pages, line 9 through 11, which state prescribing alternate forms of safety committees and safety meetings to meet special needs of small employers, agricultural employers, and employers with mobile work sites. This bill had the support of business groups such as NFIB and AGC. Farm Bureau had some initial concerns, but that was alleviated with a letter from OSHA. The bill has no opposition and was unanimously passed by your GATE committee. Good bill, should pass.
Is there further discussion? Seeing none. Representative Garrod, do you wish to close?
No, thank you.
Those who are opinion the bill should pass, vote aye. Those opposed, no. And the clerk will open the voting system. Representative Richardson, how do you vote? He votes aye. Representative McPherson. Representative McPherson, how do you vote? He votes aye. House Bill 2222, having received a constitutional majority, is declared passed. Clerk, read the next bill.
House Bill 2333, related to sex offender reporting.
Question now arises on third reading and final passage of House Bill 2333A. Representative Krieger.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. House Bill 2333 comes from the judiciary by unanimous vote. The measure relieves some persons convicted of sex offenses of the duty to report as a sex offender. If any of four conditions are met, then the person need not report as a sex offender if each of the following is true. The person is less than 5 years older than the victim. Be aware that at the present time, if the person is under 3 years difference in age, it is no violation at all, and they could actually be having a sexual affair every day of the year, and they are not charged with any crime. Also, if the victim's lack of consent was due to age only, at the time of the offense, the person had no prior adult or juvenile convictions for an offense listed under ORS 184-594, and the base age is 14. Any conduct with a girl or a boy under 14, you still could be charged and you would have to register. The committee heard testimony of men, young men, with one offense who are now required to register as a sexual offender and the difficulties it causes them in finding employment, housing, and educational opportunity. Such persons would still be convicted of a sex crime and have to comply fully with all requirements of 18 to 60 months of former probation. They merely would not have to register for only the first offense. House Bill 2333 is intended to give relief for young registration of sexual violators in cases where, for instance, a senior in high school is 18 years of age and his girlfriend is 14 years of age as a freshman who is a girlfriend. He would not have to register only for the first offense. There had to be consent and no compulsion. Crime Victims United did not oppose the bill. House Bill 2333 helps provide fairness and justice for young men who have made one mistake. Thank you.
Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Krieger, do you wish to close?
Can't believe there was no questions. Thank you. I will not close.
You were very fortunate. We'll hold discussion open for a while and see if anyone would like to ask any questions. Those who are opinion the bill should pass, vote aye. Those opposed, no. And the clerk will open the voting system. Representative Morgan, how do you vote? She votes aye. Representative Girard votes no. Representative Girard votes no. House Bill 2333A, having received a constitutional majority, is declared passed. Clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 2401, relating to public employee retirement.
House will stand at ease. Motion now arrives upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2401A. Representative Hovey.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move that House Bill 2401 be carried over to its proper place tomorrow.
Representative Hovey moves that House Bill 2401A be carried over without objection to its proper place on the third reading calendar of Thursday, April 12, 2007. Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Clerk, read the next bill.
House Bill 2490, related to escrow agents.
The question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2490A. Representative Esquivel.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, 2490 deals with escrow agents holding back disbursement of earnest money that is in a contractual agreement by the principals. Through the language in the laws that we have that we're trying to change here, it was mixed up with the closing statements of the lender, and so there, consequently it was being delayed at such time we were holding people's money and withholding it for later disbursement instructions, which is erroneous. So this just corrects the hole in the law, and it's a good bill. Hopefully I can get an aye vote out of everyone.
Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Esquivel, do you wish to close?
He does not.
He does not. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye, and those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Rosenbaum, how do you vote? She votes aye. Representative Krieger, how do you vote? Representative Krieger votes aye. House Bill 2490A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 2541, relating to business license tax imposed on licensees of real estate agency.
Representative Gilman, for what purpose do you rise?
Return to courtesy, Madam Speaker.
Representative Gilman, we will take that request after this bill. Thank you. The question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2541A. Representative Esquivel.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. House Bill 2541A is what this is about. It's about fairness. Current law does not prohibit local jurisdictions from asserting a business tax on real estate licensees, even if they do not have a physical presence within the community. Some jurisdictions have been assessing this tax on real estate licensees when they list a single house within a jurisdiction, regardless of whether the physical office is located there or not. Real estate licensees are easy targets for this practice because, of course, they advertise their listings on the Internet, in the newspaper, and, of course, they have lawn signs. House Bill 2541A would allow cities and counties to access business license on real estate licensees only and maintain a place of business within the jurisdiction. This is fair because it requires the licensee to pay the tax to where they actually conduct business and they have bricks and mortar and a substantive presence. A real estate license is issued by the state of Oregon and allows the licensee to engage in professional real estate activity statewide anywhere in the state of Oregon. A licensee pays up to $1,000 to get this license, $230 every 2 years to maintain the license, as well as 30 hours of continuing ed. Not only that, but they also pay various fees to National Association of Realtors as well as their local boards. There are over 240 cities and 36 counties in Oregon. If every city and county were to assess its own business license tax on every real estate licensee that listed a single house within its jurisdiction, statewide professional real estate activity would become near impossible. This would hurt consumers because it would limit competition and, of course, choice. Mr. Speaker, House Bill 2541A passed out of our Business and Labor Committee unanimously. There was no testimony in opposition to this bill. Therefore, I urge an aye vote. Mr. Speaker, I need to declare a potential conflict of interest since I am a real estate agent. Although this stemmed from my own hometown, which I do pay a business license because I do have a substantive presence in the aspect of having an office there. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Esquivel. Your conflict is noted for the record. Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Esquivel, do you wish to close? Thank you. Those are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye, and those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Esquivel, how do you vote? Representative Esquivel votes aye. Representative Lim votes aye. Representative Shields, how do you vote? Representative Shields was off the floor. House Bill 2541A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 2867, relating to dental hygiene and declaring an emergency.
The question now arises upon third reading and final passage. Excuse me. Before we take that, we will return to courtesies. Any objection? Representative Gilman.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. On the South Gallery, our students and the superintendent of Butte Falls School District, Steve Pine, welcome them to the Capitol.
Representative Gilliam.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I'm so used to being called Representative Gilliam or Gilman, I started to speak. Sorry. Madam Speaker, I was so pleased to be able to bring greeting to the sister of the good representative from Salem, Almsville, and Turner, but there was a terrible oversight, and I wanted to correct it. I hope that you will all extend courtesies to the father of both of those individuals and my constituent and fellow Silvertonian, Gene Cameron. Please extend courtesies. Thank you very much. Thank you, madam.
Welcome to the Capitol. Are there further courtesies? Seeing none. The clerk will read the next bill. The question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2867A, Representative Maurer.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Colleagues, House Bill 2867A is about the larger issue of health care reform. And oral health is frequently left out of the health care discussion, yet it is critical. It is a critical factor in creating healthy kids and healthy adults. This bill gets dental hygienists and limited access permit dental hygienists out into the field to provide preventive oral health services to underserved populations. The hygienists are serving people who cannot get to a dentist's office, such as kids in school-based programs, the elderly and disabled in nursing homes, and in rural communities where dentists may not be available. With this bill, dental hygienists and limited access permit dental hygienists will assess the need for service, apply sealants, prescribe and apply fluoride, and refer to dentists if further treatment is needed. By reducing the clinical hour training requirement from 5,000 to $2,500 before a dental hygienist may apply for a limited access permit. The bill will allow more of these qualified hygienists into the field sooner. In addition to the clinical hours to apply for a limited access permit, a person must have a dental hygiene degree, a dental hygiene license, and take 40 additional hours of education. The change in the hours also eliminates an unnecessary barrier to part-time hygienists in rural communities from obtaining a limited access permit. House Bill 2867A is supported by the Oregon Dental Association, Oregon Dental Hygiene Association, Oregon Rural Health Association, and Willamette Dental Group. I urge your aye vote in the interest of health care reform.
Thank you, Representative Maurer. Further discussion? Representative Girard.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I wish to declare a potential conflict.
Please state your conflict.
I'm a registered dentist.
Your conflict is duly noted. Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Maurer, do you wish to close?
No, thank you.
Thank you. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Roblin, how do you vote? Representative Roblin votes aye. Representative Rosenbaum, how do you vote? Representative Rosenbaum? Representative Rosenbaum is off the floor. Representative Jensen, how do you vote? Representative Jensen votes aye. House Bill 2867A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 3414, relating to county fair boards.
The question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 3414. Representative Thatcher.
Thank you. Colleagues, House Bill 3414 comes to us at the request of the Oregon Association of Counties. I direct to your attention a letter that was put on your desk earlier today from the Oregon Association of Oregon Counties. Currently, the members of the various county fair boards are appointed by the county commissioners. By law, they must be residents of the county whose fair board they want to be a member of. This bill simply allows the Board of Commissioners to appoint a member from an adjoining county. There are instances where it makes sense. For instance, there's a person doing a very good job for their county fair board, but they had to move over the county line. They still work in the community, they still are active in the community, and by law they are unable to serve anymore on their fair board. And it's difficult at times in some counties to find qualified, willing people to take on this responsibility. So the counties would like to be able to keep these folks serving as fair board members. In some cases, the person may still have a greater connection to the community where the fair is located after moving to an adjoining county. For example, if a person lives in government camp, they could, by law, serve on the fair board for Clackamas County, whose fair is held in Canby. That person would live over an hour away from the fair they serve. But if that person then moves to Aurora, only a few miles from Canby, they would be in adjoining Marion County and under current law unable to serve on the Clackamas County Fair Board. Just a hypothetical. Not sure if that's a real instance, but that's just a hypothetical situation, and they have similar situations have occurred in other counties across Oregon. I understand this has been an issue specifically in Benton County and Yamhill County, and no doubt will continue to be an issue, and I urge your aye vote.
Thank you, Representative Thatcher. Further discussion? Representative Butler.
Thank you. Question to the carrier.
Does the carrier yield?
Yes.
He does. She does. Excuse me.
Representative, when it talks about appointing a member of the county fair board who is a resident of adjoining county, does that include counties in Washington, Idaho, Nevada, and California?
Well, I would sincerely doubt that a county commissioner would sustain voting for somebody in an adjoining county, which would be an adjoining state. This would make it permissive for the county commissioners. It's up to them, and I sincerely doubt. See, the bill, I don't know if it's specific to that, but it certainly is intended to be Oregon counties, and I really don't think there'd be a danger of of a person from Idaho being appointed to our fair board.
Thank you. To the bill.
To the bill.
Thank you. I apologize to the good representative from Kaiser for not having asked that question before, but this is important. The county fairs of Payette County, Idaho, and Washington County, Idaho, are very important to the folks in Malheur County. We trade fair board ideas back and forth. There's a lot of excellent cross-pollination. My hope would be that we'd be able to include those folks that are doing an excellent job on one side of the border and be able to include them in this process. I think this is an excellent idea within Oregon and within those communities which are on border communities, such as perhaps Lake County, where they have folks easily accessible to them across the line, and California who participate and show in the same fairs and would like to participate on the fair board. So my hope is that if the county commissioners decide to appoint from the adjacent county, and that may not be an Oregon county, that the commissioners would have that ability to do that. Thank you.
Further discussion. Representative Girard.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
I sat on the committee that heard this bill. This is a good bill, and I just one reason that wasn't brought up is oftentimes cities lie in two counties, and so I have three cities, Idana, Gates, and Mill City, for example, that the mayor might have a real interest in Linn County, but they actually live in Marion County, and so this would give the county commissioners the freedom to appoint that. That doesn't mean they have to, it just says the freedom to do it.
Further discussion, Representative Wisnant.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Question of carrier.
Does the carrier yield?
Yes.
She does.
Good representative, I apologize for not having these questions, but ahead of time, the county fair board appointments in my county is, that's more important than any election and appointment in their life. My question is, the bill says that the courts or the county court may appoint an additional member that doesn't live in the county. Are we just, can, is it correct to assume that that court is in the county of the host fair?
I'm being told that it refers to county court, but it means county commission. It's the county commission by law that is in charge of appointing fair board members. Some, for instance, Yamhill County can appoint up to seven members right now, but they only have five. At the request of the members of the fair board, it was easier to deal with five. One of those positions would be allowed as an out-of-county individual to serve on. There could be up to seven members on the board, but one would be allowed to be from an adjoining county. Does that answer your question?
Clarification, please.
Clarification, do you yield?
Yes.
Yeah, good representative. What I'm saying is I understand the county commissioners and the courts then as a formality, but it's the court in the host fair county, right? The county that's hosting is that's the court system that's going to do this.
Yes.
To the bill?
To the bill.
I thank the committee, and obviously, hopefully, you've vented all the problems, and I will give you a vote today, but I'll investigate this further before it goes to the Senate. Thank you very much.
Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Thatcher, do you wish to close?
Yeah, just a couple comments here. Thank you. It's just in many cases, county lines don't follow school district boundaries, tribal lands, extension service activities. You've got people serving in 4-H, for instance, here in Salem. Salem-Keizer schools straddle both Marion and Polk counties. You've got people participating from both counties in both of those county fairs, and you can have dedicated volunteers helping these young individuals do their thing at the fair. I mean, they make their shows and participate in contests, etc. This just grants the ability for a county commission to allow this. Some counties have no problem finding people to serve on their fair boards, and many other counties do. This just simply allows them some flexibility. I urge your aye vote.
Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Holvey, how do you vote? Representative Holvey votes no. Representative Galizio, how do you vote? Galizio votes aye. Representative Rosenbaum, how do you vote? Representative Rosenbaum votes no. House Bill 3414, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Final reading, memorials and resolutions. The clerk will read the memorial.
H.J.M. 15, urging President of the United States Congress to fully equip Oregon Army National Guard and Air National Guard units.
The question now arises upon final reading and adoption of House Joint Memorial 15. Representative Cameron.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Colleagues, I bring before you today House Joint Memorial 15. And it came to me as a need that we need to look at this when I was listening to General Reese, General Caldwell, and their testimony of the Oregon Military Department's budget. Today, our present level of equipment in the state of Oregon, military National Guard equipment, is at about the 40% level. And there's a lot of reasons for that, but our number one reason is that we have sent the good equipment that we have with our men and women as they've gone over to serve in Iraq and Afghanistan. And that equipment has been left behind, and there's some reasons for that, and I certainly could go into detail. But basically, we had some of the best equipment in the country, and we've left that equipment over there. This is about the security of our state and the security of our country, and this memorial urges Congress and the President of the United States to fund and get this equipment back to us. I urge your aye vote on House Joint Memorial 15.
Further discussion, Representative Greenlick.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. A question of the carrier, please.
Does the carrier yield?
I do, Madam Speaker.
He does.
Thank you. I wonder if you heard testimony in the committee on this particular issue. We heard in an earlier debate on a memorial the names of more than 80 Oregon servicemen and women who have been killed in Iraq and Afghanistan. Did you get any testimony about the extent to which their deaths were the result of or partially result of the fact that they were improperly equipped?
Thank you for the question. During testimony, we did not have any testimony in regards to any action in Iraq or Afghanistan or any of those individuals as a result of the equipment. I think it's important that this House Joint Memorial is to replace the equipment that we need here in the state to train those National Guard people who are serving our state and our country. This had nothing to do with the equipment that was sent over other than the fact that it is absent from our presence here.
Thank you, sir. To the memorial, please.
To the memorial.
I certainly favor this memorial. I mean, I think we have to equip our reservists, whether they're here or in Iraq. But the fact is, we've heard, even on this floor, for example, in comments from the representative from the Emerald Empire, the notion of how he needed to help purchase equipment for his son who was on his way to Iraq. We've heard story after story about how ill-equipped our servicemen fighting this war are. And it seems to me we really need to get those folks back where they're safe if we're not going to provide the proper equipment. But the point of the memorial, as you raised, is to make sure even when they're here, they're properly equipped so they can do the job we expect of our Guard soldiers. Thank you, Madam Speaker.
Further discussion, Representative Barnhart.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. To the memorial.
To the memorial.
Thank you. This is a very important piece of legislation that we should pass with dispatch. The big problem, as I understand it, is that equipment and other material go to overseas and don't come home. The National Guard, as you know, has a number of duties in addition to those in Iraq, and while those are important and absolutely the troops should have the material they need in Iraq, but our National Guard also needs material and equipment and supplies at home to perform the duties that they have in emergencies at home and the other duties that they have for training. So this is a great deal broader than the issue of equipping our troops in Iraq. It also it takes on the federal government's failure to properly equip our National Guard for the other duties that the Guard has besides the duties that they have when they're under the president's orders. The duties that they have when they're under the governor's orders are also important, and they also, the supplies and equipment for performing those duties are also primarily the responsibility of the federal government. I urge passage of the memorial.
Further discussion, Representative Maurer.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. And I want to echo the comments of my colleague from Central Wayne and Linn counties that this is an important issue about the mission in the state of Oregon. As a member of the Search and Rescue Task Force, it was clear from the comments of the Office of Emergency Management as well as from the National Guard representative or Air National Guard representative that we do not have the equipment back in the state of Oregon to help assist in any sort of an emergency activation for search and rescue or any natural disaster, and I strongly urge your support of this memorial. Thank you.
Further discussion, Representative Schaffler.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. This comes from the Veterans Affairs Committee, which I sit on, and I agree with everything that's been said so far. It really puts a negative impact on our ability to our National Guard to respond to natural disasters and emergencies here in the state of Oregon, as well as, and I think this is really important to all of us, our ability to fight forest fires in this state. So I really like what I'm hearing on the floor today. I wish we all came together on a few more subjects like this, and I urge your vote. Thank you.
Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Cameron, do you wish to close?
Thank you, Madam Speaker. And I think it's all been said of all the reasons why we need this equipment here today. And I think most of all, those brave men and women who are serving us, even here in the state of Oregon, or if they've been shipped abroad, and we have many more that are coming, that are going to be shipped abroad here in the next few months. We need to honor them by investing in the right equipment. And I urge your aye vote. And, Madam Speaker, I respectfully ask for a call of the House.
Representative Cameron requests a call of the House. He is joined by Representative Greenlick, Representative Clem, and Representative Olson, Representative Dallum, and Representative Flores. The doorkeepers will bar the doors. The sergeant-at-arms will attend, and the clerk will call the roll.
Barker, Barnhart, Berger, Beyer, Bonamici, here. Boone, Boquist, Bruin, Buckley, Burley, Butler, Cameron, Cannon, Clem, Cowan, Dallum, Dingfelder, Chris Edwards, David Edwards, Esquivel, Flores, Galizio, Garrard, Gelzer, Gilliam, Gilman, Gerard, Greenlick, Hannah, Holvey, Hunt, Jensen, Comp, Kotek, Krieger, Crummel, Lim, McPherson, Maurer, Minnis, Morgan, Nathanson, Nelson, Nolan, Olson, Reed, Richardson, Riley, Roblin, Rosenbaum, Schaffler, Scott, Shields, Greg Smith, Patty Smith, Thatcher, Tomei, Wisnet, Witt, Mr. Speaker, excuse not subject to the call, Burley, Hannah, Greg Smith, Patty Smith.
All members are present. Those who are of the opinion that the memorial should be adopted will vote aye, and those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Nolan, how do you vote? Representative Nolan votes aye. Representative Riley votes aye. House Joint Memorial 15, having received the required majority, is declared adopted. Bills, reports, and other business lying on the table. First reading of Senate bills.
Senate Bill 838, relating to electricity and declaring an emergency.
Bill read first time is passed to the Speaker's desk for referral. Second reading of Senate bills.
Empty.
Third reading of Senate bills. The clerk will read the bills.
Senate Bill 5502, relating to financial administration for the Department of Administrative Services, appropriate money, and declaring an emergency.
Third reading and final passage.
The question now arises on third reading and final passage of House Bill, Senate Bill 5502A, Representative Jensen.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Senate Bill 5502A is the budget bill for the Department of Administrative Services. Colleagues, this is one of the very important budget bills that needs to come out because it serves all of or many of the other agencies in state government, and until this bill is out, it's very difficult for them and for the Ways and Means group to finalize some of those other budgets. The department provides services such as the motor pool, such as printing and distribution of printed materials, statewide accounting, budgeting, and payroll. It owns and maintains the uniform office rental space and the state data center. It also is responsible for debt service on pension obligation and appropriation bonds issued by the state. The Joint Ways and Means Committee approved a total budget of $1.09 billion and 964 positions. $450 million of the budget is in debt service, and the balance mainly in operations. The committee approved an internal reorganization that reduced the Information Resource Management Division by eliminating 10 positions and transferring 155 positions to other operating units. We also approved the continued consolidation efforts in the state data center. The data center operations of the Department of Education have yet to be transferred to the state data center, and we have discussed and asked the Education Subcommittee on Ways and Means to follow up on this. The committee approved additional resources for printing and procurement activities and reduced the number of staff at the motor pool. Funding to process ballot measure 37 claims is also provided. Funding was provided to continue necessary activities of the Office of Health Policy and Research. Also provided outreach funding to help the prescription drug program achieve sufficient size to be self-sustaining. We expect the program to repay the general fund $389,000 either in this biennium or the next. We also approved a modest adjustment to the current biennium federal funds limitation to use the balance of the federal grant funds that are on hand. The committee also reviewed and approved the agency's performance measures. The Joint Committee on Ways and Means recommends approval of Senate Bill 5502.
Thank you, Representative Jensen. Further discussion, Representative Scott.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. To the bill.
The bill.
Colleagues, I rise in opposition to Senate Bill 5502. The co-chair's budget has been public for nearly 3 weeks, yet members of this body do not have all of the information they need to make well-informed decisions on budget bills. I want to thank the House leadership and the co-chairs for providing us greater detail on agency comparisons and program detail for the governor's budget. They have greatly increased access and transparency since I made my initial request a little over a week ago. However, we still do not have detailed program information on the co-chair's budget. I would urge the leadership and the co-chairs to release this information immediately or to have it prepared as soon as possible so that all members of this body may deliberate the budget with full knowledge of its impact on all Oregonians. Unfortunately, I will not be able to support any budget bills until the full budget detail has been released. It is unreasonable to ask legislators to spend any more of the taxpayers' dollars without knowing where all of the dollars will be spent. I hope you will join me in opposing Senate Bill 5502 for this reason. Thank you.
Further discussion, Representative Nolan.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I want to set the record straight, please. And I appreciate the opportunity to do that here. As you all remember, a few weeks ago, Senator Schrader and I presented a recommended budget on this floor to a joint session, joint informational meeting of the legislature. We gave a great deal of information about how we constructed that budget to every member of the legislature, and we made ourselves available for the rest of that day to visit every single caucus in this building to answer specific questions or general questions about that budget. In those meetings, we made it very clear to every caucus that we are available to do that again at any time that we're invited. I again extend that offer to the caucuses in this chamber as we have to the caucuses in the Senate. We've provided to the leadership offices in this chamber as well as the Senate details of the co-chair's recommended budget by agency. We have prepared a comparative analysis that identifies for each agency currently approved budget, which is the budget that was approved under the prior leadership in this chamber, comparing that with the governor's recommended budget as well as the co-chair's recommended budget for all agencies of the state. I'll also remind the body that for the first time in over 20 years, the Ways and Means Committee is proportional. The membership of every subcommittee in Ways and Means is proportional to the membership in the chamber, and the membership of the full Ways and Means Committee is proportional to the membership in the chamber. I hope you understand, as I do, that that is a significant commitment not only by the members of the of Ways and Means and its co-chairs, but more particularly the leadership of this chamber to invite everyone to have a voice in how the budget is developed. 21 members of this chamber serve on a Ways and Means subcommittee. Every single one who serves on a Ways and Means subcommittee has mountains of information about the budgets in the jurisdiction of their subcommittee. And many of the members on both sides of the aisle are digging into the detail of those budgets on a very helpful and productive way. And we invite that. We have specifically asked members of both parties to help us dig into the budgets and find opportunities for efficiencies, find opportunities for weighing one service against another so that we can make informed decisions. We will continue to extend that invitation to all the members and extend that invitation to every member of a caucus to talk to the members of your caucus about ways that they can help you understand the budget more thoroughly. And again, I'll extend an invitation to answer questions, attend any caucus, any small group that wants to talk about the budget. I welcome that exposure and that scrutiny of the budget. But we have important business to do, colleagues. The one obligation that the legislature has is to produce a balanced budget. And if we are going to do that, we have to put our minds about that business and we have to roll up our sleeves and work together to make it happen. You will be seeing budgets for the next several weeks come across this floor. And if you want to participate in building that budget, then we invite you to vote on the substance of the budget. And if you need more information, ask us about that information. But let's have votes and debates about the substance of the budget, because this is the most open process for budgeting that this chamber has seen in over 20 years.
Further discussion, Representative Butler.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Question of the co-chair.
Question of the co-chair. Does the co-chair yield?
Gladly.
She does.
Representative, as I look over the budget and other funds and other funds, debt service, other funds unlimited, I see that there's a little over $1 billion. Was there any attempt to determine how much of that nearly $1.1 billion was general fund? I know that we've been given those estimates in the past.
Clarification, Representative, are you speaking specifically about Senate Bill 5502?
Yes, clarification. This is Senate Bill 5502, page 2 of 10 of the A and Gross version. I'm looking at other funds debt service, other funds unlimited, a total of $445,448,185,000, a combination of total about $1.1 billion.
Thank you, Representative. So on the operating side of that budget, all the money that comes into DAS, most is other funds because it comes from other agencies. But I believe your question is how much of that money comes from an agency originated as general funds. The answer to that question is about 30 to 33%.
Thank you very much.
Additional discussion? Seeing none, Representative Jensen, do you wish to close?
No, thanks.
He does not. Those of the opinion the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. And the clerk will open the voting system. Representative Volquist, how do you vote? Volquist votes no. Senate Bill 5502A, having received a constitutional majority, is declared passed. Clerk, read the next bill.
Senate Bill 5510, relating to financial administration of the Employment Department, Employment Department, appropriating money and declaring an emergency.
Question now arises on third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 5510. Representative Shields.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The Employment Department's mission is to support business and promote employment. To accomplish this mission, the agency administers the Unemployment Benefits Program, recruits and refers applicants to job openings, assists job seekers in their employment search, develops and distributes workforce and economic information, and inspects, certifies, and licenses child care facilities. The Office of Administrative Hearings adjudicates citizen and business disputes with state agencies. The Joint Committee on Ways and Means recommends a budget of $3,891,934 general fund dollars, $1,802,167,772 total funds, and $1,273.35 full-time equivalent positions. The recommended budget includes fund shifts and reductions from the essential budget level in the unemployment insurance, business and employment services, and workforce and economic research program units resulting from cuts in federal support, as well as reductions in the Office of Administrative Hearings resulting from fewer unemployment benefit hearings. The subcommittee recommended approval of Package 401 that includes 25 limited-duration positions to allow the Employment Department to provide job placement services to clients of not-for-profit and state agencies. These positions would be on a fee-for-service basis and would be filled only with sufficient workload and funding become available. Similar packages have been approved in the last five biennia. The committee recommended approval of the proposed key performance measures, including a new measure to accommodate a change in how data is measured by the U.S. Department of Labor, and a new measure which measures against a standard imposed by the U.S. Department of Labor. The committee approved deletion of six existing measures, which are either obsolete or better measured by new measures, were also approved. In addition, the committee recommended adjustments to targets for measures 8 and 9 to timeliness of appeal orders from the Office of Administrative Hearings. Mr. Speaker, the Joint Committee on Ways and Means recommends approval of Senate Bill 5510, the budget for the Oregon Employment Department.
Further discussion, Representative Krummel.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I have a question. I wonder if the carrier would yield.
Question of the carrier. Does the carrier yield?
Yes, at this time.
He does.
Thank you, Representative. I apologize for not getting these to you sooner, but I was looking at the performance measures again. And I was just wondering, in performance measure number one, says entered employment, percent of job seekers who got a job with a new employer after registering with the employment department. And the target for 2008 is 63%, and the target for 2009 is 63%. I'm just wondering, did the committee and or the subcommittee find this as acceptable?
Just a moment, Representative. I will confer to refresh my memory.
Thank you.
To the good representative from Wilsonville, we don't recall whether or not this particular key performance measure was specifically discussed, but I believe the consensus of the committee is that this was a reasonable measure based on past job placement results, and they approved the key performance measure.
Thank you. Further question, Mr. Speaker?
Further question with Kerry. Does Kerry yield?
I do.
He does.
Thank you, Representative. Was there discussion along the same lines on key performance measure number one? Was there any kind of discussion as to what types of jobs those are? I mean, are those manufacturing, family wage types of jobs, or are they, burger flippers type of jobs, or service level jobs that might not be family wage? What kind of discussion was there around that?
Just a moment, please. To the good representative, my understanding is that as part of the agency's presentation, the Workforce and Economic Development Research section of the department talked about which type of fields people were going into as well as the wages in those fields. And if that information is most definitely on their website, and I'd be happy to have the department staff get you that information if you like.
Thank you. Further question, Mr. Speaker?
Further question to the carrier. Do you?
I do.
He does.
Thank you, Representative. On KPM number 13, it refers to child care health and safety reviews and the percent of family child care facilities required to have health and safety on-site reviews that were reviewed by the child care division. What, percentages are great, but you can make them do whatever you want them to do. What kind of numbers are we talking about here of child care facilities that need to have these health and safety reviews?
To the good representative, there are two different categories of child care health and safety reviews. One is licensed and the other is certified. And the distinction is based on the degree of criteria that they must meet for different health requirements. The staff is looking to see what the actual aggregate numbers are, if that is your question, and give me about 30 seconds, and we'll see if we can find that for you. If not, we'll have to get that information for you. Just a moment, please.
Thank you.
to the good representative from page F2 in the governor's recommended budget. In their Orbitz budget narrative, it says the division has staff in 12 offices across the state to ensure the safety of children in regulated child care. Division licensing specialists receive and process child care business applications and conduct on-site inspections of 977 child care centers, 312 certified family homes, and 4,134 registered providers.
Clarification, Mr. Speaker.
Additional question of the carrier?
Yes.
Carrier is Gary Yule.
I accept. Yes.
He does.
Thank you, Representative, for that information. I just want to clarify that the numbers that you gave me are all facilities that would need to be inspected or have an on-site review in the next year or 2 years?
How often do they have to? Okay. And then we'll just get another one. We'll ask the Department of Treasury that question. Mr. Speaker, good representative from Wilsonville, the degree of recertification depends on the various classifications, and I'd be happy to have the department or LFO get you that information.
Thank you. To the bill, Mr. Speaker.
To the bill?
Yes. Yes.
To the bill.
I'm concerned about, colleagues, what we call this department. We call them the Oregon Employment Department. Most of the things that they are doing that are in their KPMs deal with unemployment. And I wonder if we don't really have kind of a misnomer here. If our employment department's job is to find or help Oregonians find employment, 63% should be unacceptable to this body. As a teacher, if I have a student that scores 63%, he's at a D-minus, or she's at a D-minus, they're at a D-minus, heading probably quickly towards a failing grade. Now, there may be some cases in some classes where lower than a 65% is a failing grade. And so I think that we have misnamed this department, because really what their job is, it appears as though, besides the child care reviews, and that's why I wanted to get those numbers on the table so that we could see what kind of, 100% is great, but it could be 100% of one, or it could be 100% of 18,000. And it helps us determine what kind of caseload there is on the workers trying to do those. But other than that, with the child care, almost all of the key performance measures for this agency is dealing with unemployment, making sure people get their unemployment checks. Don't get me wrong. I want to make sure that when a person is on unemployment, that they are able to get through the process and get their and get the benefit that they need to get, so that they can, number one, continue to pay their bills, and then also be looking for another job if that's the situation that they're in. But I'm very concerned about the employment aspect of the Oregon Employment Department, and looking at 63%, I'm not satisfied with that, and I don't think you should be either. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Further discussion, Representative Buckley.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, I hope you'll join with me in supporting Senate Bill 5510. I thank the carrier for his patiently answering questions. on the bill. And I would just like to note, as a second-term representative, how delighted I am to have the information that the co-chair and the Ways and Means process is providing for us on budgets such as this one. It's a great contrast to my first experience where the budget was decided behind closed doors by seven legislators. So I do appreciate that.
Representative Buckley, yes, Mr. Speaker. Those comments are not germane to the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I hope you'll join me in supporting this bill.
For the discussion, Representative Scott.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I rise in opposition to Senate Bill 5510 for the same reasons that I stated earlier on 5502. I would like to acknowledge that I appreciate what the co-chair is saying. However, I think that the openness that she is referring to would carry over to this one the same as she was referring in 5502. So, you know, I think that they are trying, but we just don't have the information nor the big picture to see all of that. And frankly, in discussions, we continue to be uninformed. So I would still encourage my colleagues to continue to join me in opposing Senate Bill 5510.
For the discussion, Representative Garrod.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Question of Carrier?
Question of the Carrier, does Carrier yield?
Yes.
He does.
The question I have is, there is a fairly good increase here in general funds dollars allocated in this budget. Was there any comparisons or cost-benefit analysis to maybe funding budgets that many of us consider to be underfunded in the chair's budget, such as community colleges, higher ed, and state police?
I think those of us who are on Ways and Means are always thoughtful in about the give and take of the trade-offs. I don't recall any members specifically objecting to the general fund, including the Republicans, objecting to the general fund amount in this budget based on any type of concern about community colleges or state police.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Colleagues, I have a real problem with the chair's budget as it came out, and specifically in three items. Those three items are community colleges, higher education, and state police. And so I have very few options other than to vote no on any general fund expenditure, because I don't believe the way that this is being dispersed is what I particularly want. So I would urge everyone here to vote no on these budgets until the chair comes up with some ways to backfill for community colleges, higher ed, and for state police.
Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Shields, do you wish to close?
I do. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, I just want to address some of the comments that have been made so far. Regarding the funding of other priorities, I think over the course of the next several weeks, there will be options for bringing more money into these budgets, including some revenue options like the corporate minimum tax. I'd also like to make known that this budget has been before you since last Thursday, and so regarding the notion that there hasn't been enough information, I want to make sure that that's on the record, that this has been carried over for almost a week now. To the good representative from Wilsonville, your point about wanting to improve the job placement rate of the department is well taken. We'll be sure to pass that on. I think it's also important to know that 37% that you were referring to are not necessarily a negative outcome. This could include people that may have left the state, people who've decided to go into training, people that decided to stay at home and take care of kids, et cetera. So keeping those things in mind, and keeping in mind that the amount of general fund dollars in this budget is about $3 million. At the end of the day, colleagues, we have to get the work of the people done in order to meet the June 29th deadline. And to keep us on track with that, I urge your aye vote for Senate Bill 5510. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Those who are of the opinion the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. And the clerk will open the voting system. Representative Chris Edwards, how do you vote? He votes aye. Senate Bill 5510, having received a constitutional majority, is declared passed. Chair requests that the bills remaining on today's third reading of Senate bills calendar be carried over to their proper place tomorrow, Thursday, April 12, 2007 calendar. Without objection, so ordered. Other business of the House, other business of the Senate, orders of the day have been completed. Announcements. Representative Boone.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I would request respectfully return to courtesies briefly.
Representative Boone, requesting unanimous consent to return to courtesies. Without objection, please go ahead.
Thank you. Colleagues up in the gallery, I have finally seen my entire group of guests today from Seaside, Oregon. They represent the Seaside Parks and Recreation District. Director Mary Blake, also known as Ms. Dive In Safe and Splash, with her pet redfish.
Hold on just a moment, Representative Moon. Members in the citizens in the gallery, public outbursts or commentary or applause are all inappropriate in the House chambers. Please take any expression you'd like to make outside the chamber. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And sometimes we forget names. I can remember that name easily every time I think of Mary. She has brought with her today Michael Hinton, who's the director of Kids Count, and Angela Fairless, and Max Strassi, Carrie Malugan, Jonah Tabor, Tommy Williams, Tabor, Jonathan Malugan, and Jake Strassi. And they've come to visit us here today and representing kids and, of course, my hometown, near my hometown, Seaside, Oregon. Please welcome them. Thank you.
Any further courtesies? Return to announcements. Representative Scott.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Reminder to the Republicans, we will caucus, so grab your lunch and come to the caucus room.
Further announcements? Remonstrances? Representative Lim.
Thank you, colleague. I would like to make a few comments on an event that just took place in my district yesterday. Some of you may have heard that there has been a school shooting in my district yesterday. 15-year-old boy fired two rifle shots through classroom window at the Springwater Trail High School in my district. Thank God there was no serious injuries or death, but I want to take the time to encourage each one of you to keep the student in your prayer for safety and that they heal from an experiences like this. I also want to encourage each one of us as a body to get back to the basics of the public safety for all the citizens and especially for our children. Thank you very much, Mr. President.
Further remonstrances, Representative Flores.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And thank you, Representative Lim, for bringing up that subject because it is something that I would like to address as well as we are talking about National Crime Victims Week this week. Mr. Speaker, permission to use a visual aid.
Representative Flores requests permission to use a visual aid. Is there an objection? Hearing none, please go ahead.
Thank you. And the article, the incident to which Representative Lim refers, is on the right-hand column of the front page of the Oregonian today. Front page of the Oregonian. The high school, nearby elementary school, were in lockdown for over 3 hours. Luckily, indeed, no one was killed or seriously wounded. But one of the mothers told the Oregonian as she was approaching this and got close to the school, the first thing you get flashes of is Columbine. It's not hard to panic because this is the 10-year anniversary of Columbine. Kip Kinkle, you might recall, in the school shootings in Southern Oregon, turns 25 years old this summer, and he'll be removed from the McLaren Juvenile Detention Facility to an adult correctional institution to serve the remainder of his 111-year sentence. When the Kinkle case happened, Oregon was 2 years into the implementation of Measure 11, but ironically, one day after this shooting in Gresham, neighboring my district, both the House and Senate Judiciary Committees are holding hearings on dismantling Measure 11 on two bills that deal specifically with juvenile offenders, 15, 16, and 17 years old. Mr. Speaker, I just wanted all of us to stop and think about what we're doing. Measure 11 has reduced Oregon's violent crime, and juvenile offenders are held in the Oregon Youth Authority facilities until they are 25 years old. I hope this recent shooting yesterday is a wake-up call for some and a reminder for others that we need to remain vigilant and keep our strong sentencing laws in place. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Further remonstrances? Adjournment. Representative Jensen, 10 a.m. Thursday, April 12, 2007.
Mr. Speaker, I move the House adjourn until 10 a.m. Thursday, April 12, 2007.
Representative Jensen moves the House adjourn until 10 a.m. Thursday, April 12, 2007. Without objection, House is adjourned.